joining us today for the Fair Loss of You podcast. We're going to be talking about everything related to fair trade fashion, including sustainability, ethics, human trafficking, our artisans, and keeping kids in school. My name is Jackie Costello, and I own the Golden Rule Boutique, an all fair trade boutique based in San Diego. My co-host is Jen Parlin, and she is a fair trade partner with Threads Worldwide based in Connecticut.
Welcome to the last Fairlosophy episode of the year. This episode is number 13, and it features a conversation with Kathy of 700 Rivers, a company that directly impacts Bangladeshi artisans. Kathy, we are so happy that you could hop on for an interview today. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company, 700 Rivers?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you guys so much for having me. So, like I said, my name's Kathy, and I'm the founder of 700 Rivers, which is a global, ethical, and sustainable lifestyle brand. So we actually started as a high-end women's fashion brand in 2017 and actually launched in the summer of 2018. And then just this year, we actually expanded into personal care products that are made out of all natural materials, and all of our products are handmade by women in Bangladesh that are guaranteed fair living wages.
That's amazing. I loved hearing a little bit of your story when you came to visit the Golden Rule Boutique. And I'd love to read your mission statement real quick, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So across the country of Bangladesh, millions of women and children work in garment sweatshops, unable to fully support their families. We at 700 Rivers seek to end the cycle of poverty endured by our Bangladeshi seamstresses and their families by providing them with living wages and safe working conditions. We empower our seamstresses to work on ethical, sustainable clothing for our new global standard of chic, conscious fashion. Which is so cool. I didn't even realize your company made clothing. I thought it was just the soap.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about how you started and where you started?
Yeah, totally. So we'll start at the very beginning. So my parents are originally from Bangladesh, and we immigrated to America like right before I was born. And I am one of three daughters. So my parents always talked about how they definitely came to America to give us a great opportunity because women aren't really considered equal over in Bangladesh. So, you know, it was always definitely told to us how important, you know, it was to get our education and to get a great career because this is an opportunity that we wouldn't have otherwise gotten. So that was something that was instilled to me from the very beginning. And so basically my sisters and I all got a great education. We all have stellar careers. And I always knew that I was so grateful for that. And it really just got me thinking, you know, one day when I was just thinking, well, you know, I'm so grateful that we got this opportunity, but what about the women that don't have the means to just uproot their lives and move to a different place or a place where they're going to get these better opportunities? What does that mean for them? What does that mean for their futures? And what does that mean for their children's futures and this never-ending cycle? Really, it was the Rana Plaza incident that really inspired 700 Rivers because that was what got fashion on my mind. So if any of your listeners don't know, the Rana Plaza disaster was a garment factory that collapsed in Dhaka, Bangladesh, April of 2020. And that was what really opened my eyes to how unethical the fashion industry is. Honestly, before that, I never thought about where my clothes came from or like, It wasn't something that I ever thought I needed to think about. But since then, it was something that I basically just kind of kept on my radar. And this never even started as me trying to start a company. I was just setting out to become a conscious consumer. And I was looking for people that were creating clothes that were produced ethically and that was showing us a completely transparent supply chain. And also, you know, making cute and trendy clothes that I would want to wear. And as I was trying to support these and, you know, thinking about the women that are all over the world and how we can help each other out, I noticed that there really weren't many brands that were working with people in Bangladesh. So that was what got me to set out starting 700 Rivers was because I saw like, okay, well, this is where the problem is really hitting hard and it was, you know, a problem very close to home. So I was just like, okay, well, if other people aren't doing it, then I need to figure out how I can tackle this problem myself. that was how 700 Rivers was born.
That's amazing. So you were just looking to be a conscious consumer and realizing where the products were being made, and none of the products were being made in Bangladesh.
Very much. At least none of the ethical pieces were being made in Bangladesh. There's plenty of clothing being made in Bangladesh.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So Bangladesh is actually growing to be the number one exporter of Western brand apparel in the world. Right now, it is number two, second to China. But a lot of these large retailers are moving their manufacturing over to Bangladesh because they can get even cheaper labor there. And it's terrible because the people there are essentially just exploited to work in these sweatshops. So, yes, there's plenty of clothing being made there. But I really wanted to focus on making sure that the people that were making these clothing and using their skills and talents were being paid fair living wages and got a safe working environment.
Absolutely.
Oh, Kathy, have you actually visited a sweatshop in Bangladesh?
I have not, no. So I went to Bangladesh when I was little to go visit my grandparents and my aunts and uncles. A lot of my family was still living there. So I have been there, and I definitely have seen how impoverished it is. My parents had talked about it before, but it really isn't something that you can really understand or fathom until you see it with your own eyes. And that was something that never left me. So I do have family that travels back and forth to Bangladesh from North Carolina, which is where I'm from, and 700 Rivers is headquartered. And they go and visit our facilities back and forth for us and just like keep things in check, make sure everything is going well and the women are like still doing well. So we do have people in the that work with the company to travel back and forth, but no, I have not been to a sweatshop.
That's so interesting. And I totally agree with you when we were talking in the store that I don't know any fashion brands that are in Bangladesh that are ethical. And we obviously know almost all of the brands, you know, like we research, and that is where Rana Plaza hit and changed a lot of people's thought processes.
But none of
them are there. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting too. And obviously I mean, outside of 700 Rivers, I support lots of other ethical fashion brands, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't. Like, I'm wearing an Elegant Tees shirt right now.
It's so cute.
Yeah, and so I love all of these other fashion brands, and I think we're all really working towards the same mission. But yes, I've heard that so many times, people saying like, oh, it's the Rana Plaza disaster that opened my eyes.
Yep.
But so few people are working with Bangladesh, and that really is where it's such a big issue. So yeah, that was really what got me started. I was like, okay, if other people aren't doing this, I need to figure out how I can help alleviate this problem.
Awesome. So can you tell us about your background? Because you're not in a fashion background.
Right. So my background is actually in chemical engineering. And so, yeah, so I mean, I've been working as a chemical engineer, but I have worked in startups before. So that was really great because it helped me understand like how to do the research and development. And honestly, it's product development can be very similar, whether you're making a chemical product versus clothing. You know, you do the research, you focus on product development, develop the supply chain, figure out where you're going to get your raw materials from, actually work to produce everything, and then make the clothing. So, but yes, I have no background in design or fashion whatsoever, but I taught myself a lot just by going, like Google has become my best friend. And I'm fortunate that I actually went to NC State University and still live pretty close by. So we have a great textiles program there. So I went and I spoke to a bunch of professors there, and really anyone that would listen to my idea and tried to help me out with it. And I've partnered with quite a few student designers to help me make the clothing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And what blew my mind is that there is no standard sizing chart that all the brands focus on. Because honestly, I went into it and I was like, okay, you know, I was like sketching my ideas and I was like, okay, like this is the kind of dress that I think that I want. Now make it. They were like, wait, well, what are your measurements? Like, what do you want this measurement to be? And I was like, is like, don't you just have a standard size and I can just like show you what I want and we like extrapolate from there? Oh, apparently not. We have each brand creates their own sizing chart from scratch. So yeah, that took a lot more research, and I had all of my friends, my family, like my old sorority sisters, like giving me their measurements so I could kind of like figure out people's averages. And I looked at other fashion brands to see what their sizing charts looked like, and I was like, okay, I think I can like put something together from here. But yes, it was a whirlwind.
All that work when you have a full-time job too.
Yes,
you know, like that's a lot.
Yeah, but it's been great, and honestly the impact that we're making is really the motivation that keeps me going. So it has been a lot of work trying to build it up, but
wow. And wait, who runs the company with you?
So
you have a team?
So I am the sole founder, but right? We get help wherever we can. So I'm partnering with a fair trade organization in Bangladesh. And actually, if you have seen The True Cost, they were the fair trade organization featured in that documentary.
So cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I found them, and basically, when I was first looking into starting this idea, I was thinking that it would be something kind of like the Kiva project, and we would just kind of like find women and get them a sewing machine where they could sew out of their homes. And then, you know, there were just so many other things that we needed to figure out, especially like, okay, well, one of the other things that I was focusing on is giving them a safe working environment. And this was also just like putting together missing pieces, like, okay, well, not all of their homes are in a safe working environment. Or what are we going to do if their sewing machine gets stolen, and how are we going to ensure all of that? And there were just so many questions that I needed to figure out. And then while I was talking to anyone that would listen to me about 700 Rivers and what I was trying to do, I actually got connected to the director of Thanabara Swallows, which is the fair trade organization that we're partnering with. And we just started talking, and they were actually saying, like, you know, we have this whole program set up, but the biggest thing that we're struggling with is getting more orders in. So that's when I was like, realized, oh, okay, so we're actually stronger when we work together, and I don't necessarily need to reinvent the wheel, because that would have taken more like years to really get started up. Whereas then I realized, okay, well, we can make even more impact and grow together when we work together.
Yeah, totally.
We started partnering with them, and they have a great process. And that way it was also really nice because I could work with them to like develop our whole supply chain and figure out where we were going to get our materials, because they already had some vendors that they could talk to. So I was the one saying, like, okay, well, these are the materials that we're looking for. We want to make sure everything that we're using is eco-friendly. We're not going to use any polyester, and as many like upcycled materials we can use, like that's Yay. What we're going to do. Yeah.
I love that.
So
that's amazing.
That's great.
Yeah. Thank you. It really was. So it was really great because it was a big collaborative effort where I came to them with ideas, and they were saying, like, okay, well, you know, well, have you thought about this? And we actually started working with some sari factories and collecting their waste, so that rather than letting that go into the landfills, we were using that to create new clothing. Wow. And then just finding like all these different places to source organic cotton and pineapple fiber, which was actually one of our biggest hits on our website. So that one is my favorite dress in particular.
That's so cool. But I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so not many people use it. I think we were talking to our supplier, and we are the second company to actually create clothing with it. But pineapple fiber is something that is basically, once you're done with the fruit, usually the pineapple leaves are thrown away, right? And just let go back into the earth. But what we've started doing is taking these pineapple leaves, breaking them down into their natural fibers, and then spinning that into yarn and weaving it into fabric. And it can be used very similarly to cotton.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's incredible. I love it. And it's so soft. It's an incredibly durable material. Oh, yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I need to feel this.
Yes.
I know. No, I wish we had a sample.
Yeah. No, it's my favorite dress. And actually, that was our best-selling item of 2018. So,
wow. Do you still have some of that material on your site?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Ooh, all right.
So yeah, I mean, it's great product, and we're definitely continuing working to expand. But actually this year we have expanded outside of fashion and into personal care products. So this was something that I always knew that I wanted to expand into, but it was really just a matter of finding the time to do it. And I was like, you know what, this year I'm going to do it. But we actually are now starting to use all natural materials to develop soaps. And this was nice because that actually fits a bit more into my chemical background. And I was like, okay, this is a product that I understand how to manufacture. So we actually have found another fair trade organization that we're partnering with, and they focus on employing women that have escaped human trafficking. And we're working with them to first and foremost get them mental health counseling, because a lot of the women, when they do first escape, they are not at a great place mentally, which is completely understandable after they've endured years of trauma, and a lot of them at a very high suicide risk. So for the first few months of our program, what we're really just focusing on is helping them restart their life, getting them the mental counseling that they need to basically help them remember that they have value and that they are worthwhile and that their life is not over and that things can get better. So after these months of counseling, we work together with them to help them start diversifying their job training. So I'm specifically working with them to teach them how to make these all-natural soaps. So we create these soaps that are made out of 100% natural materials and no unnecessary chemicals. And we just launched last week, actually. And you can
find... Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But yeah, so we're working with 28 women and with another fair trade organization to keep them employed. And we're working with them on a part-time basis. But my goal for next year is that we can start ramping up our company to the point where that we can be someone that they can depend on full-time. And wow. Yeah, so we we started with these 4 scents. And all of our soaps are made with a coconut oil base and soybean oil base. And then we also use these all-natural products that are really good for your skin too. So like we have soaps that are made with turmeric, which is something that is like we also focus on the local ingredients there. And turmeric has these great anti-inflammatory properties that can help reduce redness. And it's naturally antimicrobial. And it just gives you a really great natural glow. And this is something that we use a lot, just like the Bangladeshi people. I know that like the night before my wedding, I just took turmeric and put it all over my skin because it just gives you that really great natural glow.
Oh, and wow.
Then, yeah. It's great. And then we also like focus on using a lot of citrus oils, which are also, antimicrobial and help keep the skin hydrated. So basically, it's all really great products that are really great for your skin. But also, we're making sure that we are employing these women with completely fair living wages, and it's just giving back in so many different ways. So yeah, it's been a very exciting year.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Also, your packaging is so cute too. I talked to you a little bit about how we like really look for just products that are beautiful and in so many different ways. Obviously the story behind them, but your packaging is just adorable.
Thank you. Yes, that's that one I can give credit to my husband for doing that with me.
Really?
Yeah. Well, yes. So basically, again, I just took I sketched it on a piece of paper and was like, okay, this is the idea of what I want it to look. Please make this real. And he actually based the design, the background behind it, based on my wedding henna.
No way.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
So I saw the final piece and I about cried. I was like, this is exactly what I wanted it to be.
Oh, it came out beautiful.
It did. Thank you. So yes, it's something that we're very proud of. Everything really has been. I do. I just, because it is a company that I have solely founded, I just depend on my entire support system to help me out where we can, because it really does, like they say, it takes a village to make something grow. It really does.
Totally.
Yeah.
Wow. This is just awesome work that you're doing, Kathy.
Thank you.
And Jackie and I, one of the issues that we not like to talk about, but we find ourselves drawn to is human trafficking and sex trafficking. Can you just kind of dive into that a little bit more? It's such a huge issue right now.
Yeah.
On how, 700 Rivers is – is working with this issue?
Yeah. So we're right now, we're specifically focusing on human trafficking in Bangladesh. And it really is just a terrible issue there. And this happens a lot in countries where women are not necessarily considered equal. So they have a lower social status. So their education and their careers just really are not taken seriously. So when you don't really have many other options to fall back on, it can be difficult to find a different lifestyle. And what's also terrible about this is that I think right now there's documented to be about 140 women that are trapped in human trafficking right now. And that's only of the people that are documented. So it's likely that the number is much higher. But 90% of the women that are there are being held against their will.
Sorry, could you say that number again?
140,000. And that is only the number of people that they have documented, because technically you are supposed to have like their paperwork, and it's terrible because a lot of these women are under the age of 18. But if they can just like pay off like the police officers or anyone that is signing off on this paperwork, if you can just basically pay them off and they'll just look the other way and be like, yep, she looks 18, which is...
So it's okay if they're 18?
So...
Is that because they supposedly have agreed to work?
Supposedly.
In the sex trade, right? Mm-hmm. I mean...
Yeah. Yeah. So, and... But we based on speaking to the women there, and this is based off of a lot of research and just the official government reports and reading articles of reporters that have actually gone and spoken to a lot of these women in the brothels, 90% of the women are there being held captive. And a lot of them are sold into these brothels, either by like people that have kidnapped them, or like, you know, some of them are just sold by their husbands who don't want them anymore. And they're basically just held there until they have to pay back the money that was spent to purchase them.
And right.
I hate talking about these women as commodities, but that's basically how they are seen. And a lot of these women have to work in the brothels until they can pay back the head person the money that is owed to them for their freedom. And it's usually just a ludicrous number, and the number doesn't even mean anything, because they'll just like pay them back like 50 times over and they still won't be released.
But, I was just going to say, they can never pay it back, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yes. And then there's the other 10% of women, and this is, I read about this and it's really tragic. A lot of these women, once they are able to escape, realize that once they leave, they have nowhere else to go. Or that basically that's what they're thinking, because a lot of them either cannot go back to their families, or they're rejected by their families because of their past and feel like they're bringing bad karma back into their families. So then when they have no support system, no education to fall back on, and no other job skills, they really don't know what else to do. So some of these women end up going back to the brothels because they don't know how else they're going to afford their food or get any shelter, and they just don't know any other type of lifestyle. Right. So this is a big issue that we're tackling, and we're partnering with a nonprofit over in Bangladesh that helps these women. So our fair trade organization is located right in Mymensingh, which is the city with actually the largest density of brothels in the world, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And it's a city where it's just being the women there are hurting the most. And so it's located right there. So when the women get an opportunity to escape, they're there in Mymensingh and there to take the women in. And they work with these women to help them diversify their job skills, because that's basically where the big issue is that they feel like they have no other way to support themselves, or they don't know how to support themselves. And we're working with them to teach them these new skills and get them the mental health counseling that they need to basically start their new fresh start of life. That's actually why we call our soaps our fresh start soaps, because...
Oh, I love that.
Thank you. Because you're helping these women get a fresh start in their life while you're getting a fresh start to your day.
That's... Love it.
Thank you. That is something, at least, that's one of my favorite parts of like just taking a shower in the morning. It's like, okay, just getting a fresh start of your day. Mm-hmm. And It's so meaningful when you know that you're giving these women a completely fresh start, a second chance in their lives, and just helping them understand, like, okay, things are going to be okay. I don't need to go back there. I'm going to gain my own freedom and set my own independence and just like the confidence you're instilling in them when you teach someone that they can provide for themselves. It's really incredible, the transformation we've seen in these women.
That's amazing. I'd like to take just a step back. How is this nonprofit and the Fair Trade Organization finding these women? Like, once they've escaped, or are they helping them escape? Like, I would just like to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So this is another nonprofit organization that is working with the Fair Trade Organization we're partnering with. I don't know all of the details behind it, but I know that this nonprofit organization, some of them actually are going into these brothels.
Wow.
To help these women escape this lifestyle. It's really difficult to do that because most of the brothel owners work really hard to keep their women.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, so I know a lot of these women have tried escaping on their own. And when that happens, usually they send someone out from the brothel to go find them and bring them back. Mm-hmm. But this organization is working to actually get them out of the brothels and keep them out. And then it's also just like word of mouth. Just that's why they stayed in Mymensingh, so that they, if they can just spread the word and say, hey, there's another place that you can go. You don't even have to travel too far. You don't have to find too much money to get there. Just if and when you can get out, head there. Yeah. So it's incredibly difficult. And that's something that I really want to start focusing on too, is how we can help prevent women from getting there and how we can help get them out. But right now we're also just focusing on the rehabilitation of the people that have been able to get out and make sure that they stay out.
Awesome. That's so interesting. Isn't that why we love fair trade, Jackie? Because I mean, it really does. It really is something that is preventing, you know, human trafficking and sex trafficking. And it gives women, you know, the opportunity to create their own income and not find themselves in this situation.
Yeah.
So we'd love to find out what your personal definition of fair trade is.
That's a good question.
Thanks.
So I think fair trade to me means quality in both the products that I am buying and in the person's life that made that product. So it really is just like empowering people with opportunity and fair living wages to a point where they can take care of themselves and be able to afford shelter, food, healthcare, school for their children. I mean, I know a lot of these people are parents. And also just make sure that they have enough that they can also save away for a safety net. That's something that I really learned about, is the difference between, like, when you're talking about a living wage, what does a living wage mean? They need to be able to have enough money that they can save away so that they can get to the point where they're no longer just focused on surviving. When you're always living paycheck to paycheck, you can't really ever like thrive in life when you're always focused on just surviving and getting by. So that's what it really means to me. It's kindness without sacrificing quality.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that is such a huge piece, because there are some, I'm of course wouldn't name any, but there are some fair trade companies that are not focusing on quality. Of course, they're paying a fair working wage.
Yeah.
But to me, I 100% agree with you. It has to be a good quality product, especially for the consumers to be paying more for it.
Mm-hmm.
We work really hard here to not have cheap products at all. And, you know, if I was talking to a customer recently about a product that she let me know had broken, and we have had conversations in the past where, you know, if we're having products that do that, we're not going to shop with that company anymore. Like that's not who we want to be. So I like that you brought up that point about quality too, and not just on the focus on the person behind the product, but also the actual product.
Oh, yes, definitely. And that's kind of like what I was saying. Like, I started this not to start a company, but just being a conscious consumer. So I was looking for those products of, okay, yes, I'm looking for, like, it has to be, like, made fair trade, and I would want it to be eco-friendly and sustainable, but also it needs to be something that I would want outside of those things too. Yep. You know?
Exactly.
So yeah, that's like where it started, is being able to shop using my values without sacrificing my style and what I want.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't want people shopping with you because they feel bad, exactly, and they feel like it's a charity, yeah, purchase. It's like, no, these are gorgeous products, and like, I want them because they look good and I look, yeah, good in them. But at the same point in time, I know that it's being made ethically, and the person that, you know, is making it is getting paid, yeah, fairly, and, you know, and the quality and the materials that are that the product consists of, it's just all in alignment.
Exactly. Yeah. It so can't be a pity purchase. Important.
Yes. Yeah. Because exactly, that won't be, yes, sustainable if it's a pity, no, purchase. You know, they won't come back and shop with you because they're not wearing that piece. They're not using that soap in the first place. They're not going to come back and buy another one. You know?
Exactly.
So, yeah, totally. So what is your favorite part about running the business? What do you like the most about it?
Definitely talking to the women. So that has been incredible. So I've actually Skyped with some of the artisans that we've worked with. And I think what is so beautiful about that is I recognize we're all just the same.
Yep.
And like when it really comes down to it, because I've spoken to some of the artisans, one of our artisan through that actually works with us to make our soaps. I was just talking to her and asking her, like, you know, what do you like about working here? What can we do better? Why are you doing what you're doing? And what are your hopes and aspirations? And honestly, it all really just came down to her wanting to create a better life for her children. She has two daughters, and everything she does, she says she focuses on making sure that they get their education and that they can feel proud of their mom and what they're doing or what she's doing. And she wants to basically just make sure that they never suffer the same fate that she did. And she's going to do everything that she can to help them. And honestly, I heard that and I'm just like, I hear my mom's story in you.
Yep.
And like, obviously my mother had different circumstances, but that's everything she said. My mom left her comfort zone to move to a different country where she didn't know anyone, but she knew she was doing it all to help her children. And that is exactly like, mm-hmm, what I keep hearing in their stories too. Everything that they're doing, you know, these fair living wages that we are so focused on, they never talk about themselves, you know? It's never like, oh, well, I needed a roof over my head. I needed to feed myself. They always talk to me about their children. Mm-hmm. And I've just started loving hearing about that. So I just love like learning their children's names and how old they are. And, you know, like what is your motivation? What drives you? And it's usually their children that drives them. And that's now like what drives me, is helping them and just helping their futures and helping their children too. That's actually a big goal of mine, is I recognize so much of this centers around education. I'm starting to take a portion of our profits and I'm working towards developing a scholarship so we can start helping send more children to school. Because, I mean, that's how my story started. I realized I came to America, you know, I was able to get my engineering degree and I got this great career. It all really does come down to the opportunity I got through my education, and that's what I want to give back to them too.
Amazing. That's so cool. I love that. Those are the two things that Jen and I talk about, you know, human trafficking, keeping kids in school, and, you know, that's what we care about, and you're right in line with that. I do want to say too, I mean, one of the facts that I like to share is that when women are getting their own income, they're reinvesting 90% of that back into their families. And that really, it really is then changing the next generation, right? And men are only reinvesting 25% back into the family. So they're either, and I don't know where the rest of that money is going, honestly, but that's just a fact and statistic I've heard. But, you know, they're either keeping it for themselves or, you know, not letting the kids go to school or what have you. But, so yeah, it just was triggered when you were talking about that fact.
Yeah, that's so. I have heard that women reinvest 90% of their income back into their homes, and I've seen that with my own eyes. I did not know that, or I hadn't heard that statistic from men, which is so interesting because you know, Bangladesh definitely is a very patriarchal, mm-hmm, country. So just Yeah, just seeing the difference when you give the money back to these women and what they're doing with it, it really does just warm my heart and show like, okay, we're
Yeah.
doing this for the right reasons.
Absolutely.
I hate to say this, but I'm wondering if the men are investing some of their money in the brothels. I mean, no one likes to talk
Yeah.
about that, but it's such a big industry and they're making so much money. I mean, there's obviously
Yeah.
consumers. So when there's a demand, you
Yeah,
know.
and I have read that a lot of the men that go to the brothels are married.
Really? Wow.
That doesn't surprise me, but all right, well, to switch gears a
Yeah.
little bit. Had to go there for a minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, so as far as the challenges that you've faced, I mean, starting a business is it is difficult. You know, anyone that has their own business will have many stories about, you know, their challenges and things that they've gone through. And do you have any, you know, stories of challenges or just specific challenges that you've come across
Yeah.
so
Oh,
far?
definitely. So, when I set out to start my business, I really didn't know how many things I would need to oversee. So many companies have all of these different departments, and I am every single department. So, I felt pretty good with the product development side, although yes, like the sizing of clothing was definitely something that I needed to learn about. But also just understanding like finances and how to do all of the accounting and like business taxes. And honestly, being a global company, customs was a big one for me. And that one was difficult because I did have a few times where I was trying to send samples back and forth with our partners. And we had a timeline that we were trying to hit, and then my samples would just get stuck in customs and just held there for
Oh
like a month and a
no.
half. And I think that drove me crazy because usually when there's a problem, I'll go find like figure out what my next solution is or what my next step can be. But when it's just held in customs, there's nothing you can do. And that drove me crazy. But yeah, I mean it really is just a huge learning curve. Being like, okay, well, I have these talents and I have these skills, but now you got to figure out how to fill in like the other 80% of skills that you did not study. So yeah, that was a big one for me. And also just like learning all the different ways to share the story. That has been something that's been interesting for me too. Because, we're talking about all of these women, but it's kind of like what you were saying too, is we never want them to buy something because they feel bad for the women. It can't be a pity purchase because that strips them of their dignity too. So I think when I first started, I was talking all about the artisans that we were working with and what we were doing and the impact we were making. And that's still something that I talk about, but I've learned that I also need to talk about how great our products are. And, because that was just something that I guess I thought was just like a given that I wouldn't ever try to sell someone something bad. But I was just like, oh wait, well, not and like, not everyone knows what pineapple fiber is. And what the benefits of that are. So, it's like it's a great, incredible material that's super breathable, it's machine washable, and it holds on to the dye really well. And it's great for both, summer and the fall because it keeps your body temperature pretty well regulated. And just things like this. And I focus so much on the tech side, so like you can hear that in what I say. But just explaining like why our products are so wonderful. It's like, oh, I should have like picked up a business minor or a marketing minor when I was studying, but I never would have predicted that I would have tried starting a company like this when I was in college. So it's been a lot of learning about how I can help these women, help our company grow, and just figuring out all the other hurdles along the way. What about you guys? What has been your biggest struggle as you start your companies?
I think one similar to you is kind of doing everything. I don't know if you know this, Kathy, but I am also an occupational therapist. So that
You
is my
mentioned that,
background.
yeah.
Yeah, so we both have very different backgrounds in fashion. So yeah, just learning everything. I didn't have a business background at
Yeah.
all, and just learning all of the little things. And You know, even now, learning how to hire and delegate and manage and all of that fun stuff.
So. Oh, yeah.
Jen, what's yours?
Well, thankfully, I work with a company that kind of has gone through all of those challenges themselves. And I've been lucky to, you know, to just kind of be next to them while they're going through it. So I'm not personally going through it, but we're, you know, kind of still in the startup phase, Threads Worldwide. And
when did Threads Worldwide get started?
It's been about 8 years, I want to say now.
Okay.
So what I love about them is that it was really organically grown, and it has been through the years. I don't think they've put really a lot of money into marketing, and that's where kind of we come along as like Fair Trade Partners, and that, you know, we're doing the word of mouth marketing, and we're sharing it with our community, our friends and our family, and kind of building from there, which is really cool because it's a conversation that, you know, you don't really have when you host jewelry parties, essentially.
Sure.
So it's just a really different kind of thing. And I find myself having that conversation with people about it. And they're like, oh, fair trade. And they don't really understand. They say, oh, did you make the jewelry? And I said, no, it's made by women in developing countries. So then I realized that they don't really understand what fair trade is. So
yeah.
So it's a cool conversation starter.
Oh, definitely. And that's been interesting too, because, well, first off, word of mouth marketing is definitely the best way to go, because I know that I trust my friends' referrals more than anything, like more so than any ad that I would see online.
Right.
But also just, yeah, the way that our conversations are shifting. I know that a lot of my friends have changed their shopping habits as I've been growing and learning more about fair trade and what it takes and what it, like where, not just clothing, but like where all of our products are coming from.
Yeah.
And just the way that it's shifted my habits, it's shifted my mentality. And I've been talking about that. And some of my friends came and told me, they're like, oh my gosh, I've completely changed the way that I shop. Like, I don't shop at H&M or Forever 21 anymore. I like won't even step foot into that store. And it just made me really proud that not only are they, you know, supporting these fair trade businesses, but they're also changing. They're really listening. And that's been a great thing too. And I've been noticing that mindset over the like last few years. And that might be because, you know, I'm so focused on it. Yeah, exactly. But I really have been noticing that people are starting to care a lot more where their products are coming from. And that's something I'm really happy to be a part of.
Same. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that some people are just closed-minded to it, but if they're open-minded and ready to listen and read and that kind of stuff, like I had somebody reach out to me on Instagram and that I haven't spoken to in years say, wow, Jackie, I've been following along and I have started to really think about the people behind my products and sustainability. And it's just somebody that I didn't even know really followed me on Instagram, which was pretty cool. You know, that people, even if they're not liking and commenting, you know, people are engaging. And, you know, we all just got to keep doing the work. And it's slowly snowballing, I think, you know.
Exactly. Especially as more options are available to you.
Yep.
So I think, like, as kind of like what you were saying, now that they can have this fair trade jewelry option, they'll think, oh, well, what is fair trade? And how does that apply to the rest of the products as well? So that's great too. So that's why like these conversations or this podcast or even like having more stores that showcase fair trade products like your store, Jackie, it really is helping facilitate this conversation and making more people think about the people behind their products.
Yep. Awesome. I love it. So we like to ask to our interviewees, how your business has changed some of your day-to-day life or some of your habits. And I know that, you know, it kind of started from, you know, learning about ethical consumerism and things like that, but if it's changed your daily habits in other ways.
Yes. So I think I always used to think of myself as a, like, pretty eco-friendly person in the fact that like I recycled and, you know, like I really thought that was all it took. And as I've started focusing a bit more on this, because, and that was something else I will say, is I came into this starting this fashion brand because of I learned how unethical it was. But as I was doing more research, that's when I learned how unsustainable it was too. Mm. And this just opened a whole new thought process of just like, okay, not only where are my clothes coming from, but what is it made of? And that made me start thinking about other products too. So that was actually how we started focusing on using only all natural materials. So all of our stuff were made out of silks or upcycled silks or the organic cotton or pineapple fiber, because we wanted to make sure whatever clothes we were creating, it could eventually go back into the earth. Mm. So everything that we used was made out of biodegradable fibers. And that's something that I think scares people, because people are like, oh, biodegradable fibers, it's going to fall right off of me. No, it won't. But yes, eventually it will go back into the earth. And that really made me start thinking about like, okay, well, I'm really focusing on eliminating plastic from my clothing by making sure I don't make any more purchases with polyester. How can this apply to the rest of my life? And I started just really focusing on other ways that I can go plastic free. And so it was like, and that's also how I started learning, like, just recycling is not enough, because only about 2% of our plastic bottles that get are recycled actually get recycled and turned into something else.
Oh my God, that's so low.
Yeah. So I was like, oh my gosh, so 98% of the things that I've been recycling are still ending up in a landfill likely. So that has also, that's actually how the soap bars got started, is because I started making my own shampoo. And I was like basically just creating these shampoo bars. So kind of like the way we have soap bars right now, we can also make shampoo that same way. And that way you're just eliminating the plastic bottle from the get-go. There's no need to recycle anything. Just you're basically just eliminating it from the process. And this is basically just everything starting with me being a conscious consumer. I was like, okay, well, if, you know, I'm making this for myself, there are probably other people that are interested in this too. So we started with our soap bars. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is something that you're the first ones to hear that we're about to disclose. We're actually working on developing some shampoo bars and conditioner bars too that are also going to be made, thank you, by these women. And using all natural materials and just completely eliminating the need for a plastic bottle at all.
I love that. I'm so excited for that, because I've been looking into that myself. I haven't tried any yet, but yeah, I've been, same thing. I've been thinking about trying it. So I'm excited.
Yeah. So I will say, I think starting this company, or really just starting to do more research, and it's made me start thinking about the other products that I use on a daily basis and how I can make that more eco-friendly and make sure that I'm just being conscious of as many products as I can.
Very cool.
That's so cool. And everyone that's listening, you've heard it first on the Fairlosophy podcast. So
you're
insider info, yes.
And I think that made me think about my packaging as well, because, you know, a lot of the soaps that you'll see nowadays, a lot of them do wrap it in plastic, and that helps keep the scent in. And I was just like, no, we're definitely not doing that. And not only did I want to go plastic free, but I wanted to make sure that the materials for all of our packaging was eco-friendly too. So we went above and beyond trying to find biodegradable packaging. So all of our soaps are actually packaged in 100% jute paper, which is a crop that is very abundant over in Bangladesh. And they use that usually to make ropes. And it's a vegetable fiber, and we've turned that into a thick paper, and that is actually what our soaps are boxed in before we send.
Oh, wow. Cool. I totally agree. I get frustrated because there's so many farmers markets around here and, you know, a ton of soap makers, which is great, but then they all use that shrink wrap plastic around their soaps.
Yeah.
And it gets me so mad. I'm like, just sell it without the plastic. Mm-hmm. Like, I would buy it, just sell it without the plastic.
Yeah. Or even like when I go to the grocery store, there's so much produce that's unnecessarily wrapped in plastic too.
Right. Yes. Yeah. So true.
It's really hard, but I'm trying to take more steps just in my everyday life to make sure I'm like being as eco-friendly as possible and eliminating the plastic. And I think if more people start being vocal about that, the large companies are going to listen, because their big thing is they just want to sell products. And if we're not buying something because it's wrapped in plastic, they'll respond because they want to sell their product.
Yep. They'll figure out another way to do it. Definitely. I didn't know until recently that in California, your stuff doesn't get recycled. They end up throwing it in the trash if it's in a plastic bag. So we've been putting our recycling in plastic bag, which is silly in itself because it's in a plastic bag and that won't get recycled. But for cleanliness in our house, and we bought things in bulk and, you know, what have you, they don't get recycled. So we've been recycling for 4 years in California and they don't get recycled.
I did not know that.
I know. My husband and I just learned that recently. This episode will be airing on New Year's Eve. So I think we're all thinking about the new year, the new possibilities, and, you know, a new decade, New Year's resolutions. Well, a couple things. We're wondering if you had any New Year's resolutions yet, or also if you could tell us what's in store for you and 700 Rivers in 2020.
Yes, definitely. So in 2020, we are working on expanding. So I told you guys a little bit about our next product lines that we're working to offer. My big goal is that as we're starting to grow these product lines and start to offer more pieces, my big goal is to hire more women. That's really how I feel we're making our biggest impact. And that is my biggest goal for 2020. So increase our number of product offerings, increase the number of soap scents, and start to increase our textile lines as well. And for my own self, I want to focus a bit more on going plastic free and just making sure that I continue thinking about all of my products. And it's something that can be very overwhelming when you try to make a huge shift all at once in all of your products. So I'm trying to, as I run out of something, I'll go to replace it and I'll look up if it's fair trade, if it's how eco-friendly it can be. And just really try not to overwhelm myself, but still focusing on making that change. And this is a personal one, but I think I need to focus a bit more on taking care of myself. Between having a full-time job and working on this literally every hour outside of my full-time job, just kind of getting back into like starting to meditate. I've heard that has been really helpful for people's mindsets and working out a bit more, just making sure that I take care of myself, because if I fall apart, then who's going to keep 700 Rivers moving forward? And then who is going to keep employing these women? So that is a big me. What about you all?
Love it. Well, Jen, wasn't yours plastic as well? Figuring out.
Yeah, I've already been, you know, making some improvements, I should say, in better choices when I'm shopping and the things that I'm using on a daily basis. But some things are just, I'm finding so difficult. And also the convenience factor is really hard. You know, I still use Amazon as much as I wish I didn't, but it's just so darn easy to push the button, you know, Prime, ship now, I get in 2 days. But really trying to shop more local and find the products that I'm using locally instead of, you know, via Amazon. But yeah, I've cut back on plastic a lot, but I still use a lot. I still use a lot of just materials that I'm just throwing away. And like you were saying about the bottles, well, recycling, and I also put them in a plastic bag and throw the plastic bag. I don't know what my local recycling laws are or whatever, but yeah, I feel like it's not really talked about. And so how much of this stuff is not actually being recycled? I mean, we know that a portion of it already isn't recycled just because there's too much of it, but Jackie, I forwarded you something on Instagram this morning, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was about how people order different sizes of a cloth. Like, they go on a website and they're like, I don't know if the small, medium is going to fit me, so I'll just order them both and I'll return them. And so when they actually, you know, send, or something doesn't fit that they don't like it, they send back their returns and they think, okay, whatever, I'm getting my money back, I'm sending the clothes back, that I'm not keeping. When these big companies get returns, it's so much easier for them to just throw the returns away than actually going back and processing them and making them like sellable again.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
So there's so, so many returns, super high percentage. It like blew my mind. Yeah, get just thrown into the garbage, into the landfill. So I was like, wow.
You know what's contributing to that too is that they're giving consumers free returns. So then they're automatically doing that, right? They're making that easy choice. And I can understand why it's like a sales tactic and things like that, because you know you want to make things easier for your customer, but then that's in turn what becomes the result, you know, that then they're using that just as waste and it's ending up in a landfill. That's awful. I didn't know that.
I wish that we had a list of, you know, if companies are transparent about if they're doing this or not, because that would be really good information. So yeah, there's so many things that I have that I want to do. Personally, I have a lot too. Just breaking some bad habits of productivity and also like mindfulness. Like I'd like to get back into meditation practice as well. So, and just being off the social media and the internet, I just spent hours like thinking I'm doing stuff, important things, when I'm just really checking my email 100 times for what email, I don't know, but it's going to come at some point, that email.
That email I've been waiting on, yeah.
What about you, Jackie?
It's kind of crazy. This time last year, Jimmy and I sat down and watched a ton of videos on goal planning and goal setting and really just setting up, you know, for the next year. And I feel like I have no time this year to do something like that. And I haven't even thought about the next year. I'm just trying to get through December. But we're doing a vision board workshop at the beginning of January. So I do feel like I want to really sit down and think about the next year. This past year, we have a gratitude journal. I mean, not a journal, a gratitude jar. So we've been putting, you know, when we meet, you know, a mini goal or done something great or, you know, what have you, we've been sticking in the goal and we've definitely missed some, but we're going to sit down and go through some of those together and just like reflect on the next year. And I think that that's one thing I haven't done in the past is like really reflect on what did I accomplish this year and what were the good things instead of just like move forward, what's next. So mm-hmm. I definitely want to sit down and kind of reflect on that, because I have been I don't do it every day, but I have been meditating much more this year, and I have been working out much more. It's like getting that under control. Like in the past if I missed a day, I just wouldn't go to the gym for like then a week, you know. But now I'm like, okay, I couldn't go this morning because I had to be at the store so early today. I'll just go tomorrow and it's fine. So I've gotten that routine down. But yeah, I think plastic is definitely something I need to get more control over, you know, especially with finding out about putting our recycling in bags and little things like that. You know, I'd love to start using those shampoo bars and just really start walking the walk even more, you know.
Yeah, totally. I love all that. I love the gratitude jar. That's really cool.
Yeah, really cool. I picked up on that too. That's a really great idea. I was just thinking the other day, this was while I was like fulfilling all of these 700 Rivers orders and just like packaging everything up and putting the labels on. I was just like, oh my gosh, I have so much to do. I took a second. I was like, I used to dream about the day mm-hmm. that I had all of these orders that I needed to ship out to customers that loved our mission and loved our products. And here I am just focusing on like, I need to get this out the door. And it's just like, I need to take a second. Just, wow, look at how much has been accomplished this year. Like take getting out a whole new product line. This is incredible. And I think that's something that I should probably add to my resolutions too, is just taking a second every once in a while, just being like, hey, take the second to be proud. You've worked really hard for this.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. That's good.
Yeah, and we did that because we felt like last year we weren't doing that. you know, we weren't looking at everything that we had accomplished. We were kind of just in that mindset, like I said already, of ready to move forward. What's next? What do we want to accomplish? You know, instead of being like, well, look how far we've come, especially with the business. I do that all the time. Same thing with what you were just saying. I get so wrapped up in where do we want to go and what's next and what can we do and where, you know, how can we reach this goal and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, you know, we've been in this business for almost 4 years and look how far we've come. And I always need to step back and reflect on that, you know. Like, we opened a brick and mortar this year, and that's crazy.
That's incredible. You know? Like,
it is. And it's just so, like, I just get so wrapped up in, well, we're not meeting this month's goals and, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, take a breath, you know, like, it's okay.
And it's such a nice store, too. I'm glad I got the opportunity to see it.
Oh, thank you. I was so glad when you came in. I was like, you follow us? You know who we are?
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
Oh, I love that. So for our listeners who are wanting to make more conscious decisions, you know, going into 2020, do you have any suggestions for them, like ways to start?
So obviously, you know, if you're looking to go plastic free, that's something that I feel like I heard in all of us, using reusable water bottles. And, you know, I feel like that's something that you need to get into the habit of carrying it with you. I used to do a check of like cell phone, keys, wallet before I walked out the door. I'm starting to add water bottle into that too, because there have been so many times that I'm like, oh, I left my water bottle at home. I need to just go like buy this one as I'm out the door, or yeah, once I'm out and about. So just like starting to add that into your daily habit. Really, and this is another thing too, is, you know, we say all the time, like, shop fair trade, but not everyone always has a fair trade boutique really close to them. So something that I would really recommend is, you don't have to feel overwhelmed and trying to change everything at once. But like, maybe as you run out of something and you're going on Amazon to go and just quickly replace it, maybe take a second to be like, okay, well, what can I replace this with that is making a bigger impact in the world? If you're looking for soaps, check out 700 Rivers' website. Things like that, you know, like that's how I got into like the shampoo bars. I ran out of shampoo and I was just like, well, do I really need to buy liquid shampoo again? Or can I get this somewhere else and, you know, make it more eco-friendly? Or is it something that I can make myself? Things like that. So just take it one step at a time. I think I try too hard to just go all in all at once, and that can be hard. And then it's like, I think I just felt overwhelmed with guilt that I wasn't moving fast enough. So just give yourself a break sometimes. Take it one step at a time. I think that would be great advice.
So where can everyone find you if they want to shop with you and follow you on social media?
Yeah. So everything we have right now is on our website at 700rivers.com, and that is spelled out. So SEVEN and keep spelling out 100rivers.com. Or you can find us on Instagram at 700rivers or on Facebook at the 700 Rivers.
We wish you a very happy new year, and may 2020 be an amazingly impactful year for us all. Cheers.
Here at the Fairlosophy Podcast, we recognize that we do not live in a bubble. We are all connected. There are people behind every product we shop for, and we can influence their lives when we vote with our dollar. If you like this episode, take a screenshot and share it on your social media. When you do, you'll be entered to win a giveaway that we will do live on Instagram once a month. Tag us and follow us at the Fairlosophy Podcast. Good luck. We'll be right back.